The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast was made possible by Squarespace, the all-in-one website maker with Cover Pages, a new feature that expresses your ideas with a bold single-page website. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Dailies. It's not working as well.
Ben's in a good mood today.
This bad mood had the other day. Like,
all right then. Hello and welcome to the Dailies, the Guardian Film Team's daily-ish roundup of movie news and reviews. I'm Henry Barnes. It's Wednesday, 25th of November, and joining me today is Benjamin Lee. Ben, adult sleepovers are apparently a thing now. So, which film star would you have round, and what would you serve as your midnight feast
for a sleepover? We spoke about this before in Cannes. We were going to try and ask Charlize Theron over for a sleepover.
She'd be great, wouldn't she?
She'd be great. She's really
so
good
much
fun.
Yeah.
We're going to ask her if we could hold her hand the whole night, though, which might be a bit weird.
What would you serve her as your midnight feast?
Flumps.
Flumps, perfect. Excellent. On to the news. Now, just in time for Thanksgiving, Forbes have named 2015's top turkeys. This year's biggest bird was Rock the Casbah, the Bill Murray comedy about a washed-up rock star who heads to Kabul to help a young Afghani poplar win a televised singing competition. Casbah, which cost a reported $15 million to make, took only $2.9 million at the box office. Other grand-scale flops this year include Sean Penn actioner The Gunman, $10.7 million off a reported $40 million budget, and Chris Hemsworth hacking caper Black Hat, $19.4 million off a reported $70 million budget. Ben, first thing to say is I've said reported a lot there, and it's the shady world of Hollywood. We often don't know how much these films actually cost. So should we really trust these figures?
Well, these figures also, I think this is just box office. I don't include Home Ent. And a lot of these films, I think, will have probably done better on Home Ent. Black Hat, for example, I can imagine being quite an easy rental compared to something you go and see. So I think these days, with the way we consume films, I think this figure isn't always the most reliable. And also, it's not the end of the year yet, so I feel like there are some flops on the way still. I think Victor Frankenstein could be...
Or some flumps, even.
Some flumps and some flops, yeah. I think this list is actually quite encouraging, though, because I think all of the films in the top 15 or 20, however many they are, they're all bad films, which is quite encouraging. I mean, Crimson Peak isn't a bad film, but it wasn't a great film either. And I think all of the films that are at the top, most of them have got bad reviews. I feel like it's quite encouraging to see that people aren't going to see bad films.
You were saying this the other day. I mean, you're right. We've got Gem and the Holograms in there, American Ultra. These are films that were pretty much panned across the board. And it seems like the public are either listening to us, which surely can't be the case, or they've got some taste.
I do think the reviews are shared more easier these days because of Twitter. Not only users' reviews, but I think people, if there's a particularly bad review of a film, if it's funny, then it does get shared more. So I don't actually feel particularly bad for any of these films. I think it's good to see, you know, bad films not doing very well.
What's the practical use of a list like this, do you think? Like, why? I mean, it's fun to see what does badly, I guess, but what does it actually help?
I mean, if you're an executive, I guess it's useful to look at it. But there's that sort of famous Hollywood adage that no one knows anything. So you never really know what's going to work. Although, and it's easy for us to say now, looking back on these films, oh well, who's going to watch a Bill Murray comedy set in Kabul? But then weirder films have done well. So you know, we can always look at learnings from these, but you never really know.
Okay, and speaking of gobblers, Fantastic Four 2 has been taken off Fox's release schedule. The sequel to the critically panned superhero adventure was originally slated to launch in June next year. Presumably it's now been scrapped or at least sent for a sojourn in an alternative dimension. Ben, it's not a great surprise this. The first film did pretty terribly and everybody hated it.
Yeah, and I think the whole kind of scheduling in sequels and spin-offs and prequels before you actually know how the first one does is this horrible new tactic in Hollywood that I think Marvel have propagated more lately and DC followed, and then Fox and Sony have tried to. But I think this kind of arrogant scheduling has come up a bit of a cropper. Sony struggled with, they had all those crazy Spider-Man release dates for Sinister Six, Venom and stuff. They've all disappeared now because the Spider-Man reboot was dreadful. So again, I think studios need to just calm down a bit when they schedule in all these sequels.
It is interesting that rush of the blood to the head, though, because it's based on rights holding, right? Like, Fox had to make another Fantastic Four film, otherwise they'd lose rights to the franchise and it would presumably revert back to Marvel, who could then do their own version of it once again. So you feel like they're constantly looking over their shoulder, checking that the deadline's approaching, and they just have to put something out there no matter how good or bad it is.
Yeah, and that's never going to really end up with a great product.
No.
If the main reason for making a film is a commercial or legal need without much care for creativity, then it's not going to lead to a particularly good place. And I imagine from what I've heard and from some of the tweets that Josh Trank sent that there were all these kind of backroom arguments that led to the kind of weird film that we ended up seeing. So I think it doesn't lead to a good thing.
I'd kind of be fascinated to see a sequel of it, though. Like, I didn't think the first one was actually that bad. It had some interesting ideas in there, but it was just jumbled into a mess.
Well, you're wrong, though. Sorry, but you're really wrong. Sorry. It was dreadful. I would hate to see a sequel to that film. It was awful.
Casting news. Ben, tell me how excited you are about each of these in the form of a dance move. We've got Tom Cruise, who's going to be in the Mummy reboot. It's kind of like a slow rolling, like bouncing through the hood kind of thing there. Ryan Gosling playing Neil Armstrong for Damien Chazelle in the Whiplash director's biopic First Man. Oh, more kind of jiggy, more of a Will Smith vibe. And then finally, speaking of Will Smith, we've got a woman in black joining the Men in Black in the next Men in Black film. Kind of a uncertain bop. What do you think of that, a woman in black joining Men in Black?
I think it kind of follows in with the the Mummy reboot as well is supposed to have a female mummy as well. There's the female Ghostbusters, there's the female in Roadhouse. I think if it was purely done for a creative need or again for diversity, then great. But I think it's again done for just how can we make this old franchise seem a little bit more interesting and do something different with it. And also, I'm always a bit wary of Sony franchises because Sony are notoriously in a troubled place with franchises. They don't really have any that are doing particularly well yet. I don't think you can really call 21 Jump Street and Hotel Transylvania franchises yet because they've been two films of each, but they've really struggled with trying to maintain long franchises. And at the moment, they're in trouble because the Bond franchise is up for another buyer potentially. And so they're going a bit back further with Men in Black and Bad Boys. They've already scheduled two Bad Boys sequels in, which seems kind of bizarre to me. And they're doing a Men in Black crossover with 21 Jump Street 2.
That was in the Sony hacks, right? I mean, it's unconfirmed, but it does seem like a strange idea.
It's just a bit desperate. I mean, and they've also got sequels for The Equalizer coming up. They're struggling with Dragon Tattoo because they might be getting a new cast and rebooting it. They're making the Smurfs animated now rather than feature the one before. The last Resident Evil film, another Underworld film, a Ghostbusters universe. It just screams of desperation for me that they don't know what they're doing.
Speaking of weird things that they've done with the franchise, I completely forgot this, but Michael Jackson was apparently in the second Men in Black film.
I read that too, but I don't remember it.
I don't remember it.
I don't remember the second film at all, though, to be honest.
What would they have cast him as? An alien?
I think he was an alien.
I got to watch it again.
I saw the third one on a plane, I think, and I think I got emotional because I was on a plane.
Sure, because you're on a plane. That's it for today. Coming up on the site, we have a video of Catherine interrogating Steven Spielberg about his new film, Bridge of Spies, a first look review of Spike Lee's Chirac, and Ben Charles' Weekend Geek on the new Captain America trailer. Follow us on Twitter, chat to us on Facebook, and join us tomorrow when we'll have a world-exclusive audio-only teaser for the teaser trailer for the trailer of Star Wars Episode 16 Part 1. Bye! Just a little postscript to the Men in Black thing. Apparently, Michael Jackson was on a big screen talking to people, according to producer Rowan, so even more of a reason to go back and watch it again.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.